On August 8, 2011, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Seventh Circuit in Chicago in the case Donald Vance and Nathan Ertel versus Donald Rumsfeld in the United States of America ruled that two American citizens can continue with their lawsuit holding former Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld personally responsible for their alleged torture. Both plaintiffs worked as contractors in Iraq and were wrongfully detained and subjected to enhanced interrogation techniques by American military officers. The court agreed with several rulings of a lower court regarding the case. Specifically, the Seventh Circuit found that Vance and Ertel alleged insufficient detailed facts supporting Secretary Rumsfeld's personal responsibility for the alleged torture, that Secretary Rumsfeld is not entitled to qualified immunity on the pleadings, and that a Bivens remedy is available for the alleged torture of civilian U.S. citizens by U.S. military personnel in a war zone. Bivens remedies allow for citizens to sue for damages for constitutional violations committed by federal agents. On April 16, 2006, two U.S. contractors in Iraq's Red Zone were handcuffed, blindfolded, and transported to Camp Cropper, a U.S. military facility located a few miles from Baghdad International Airport, where they were detained as security internees. There, Donald Vance, a Navy veteran from Illinois, and Nathan Ertel, a U.S. government contractor hailing from Virginia, experienced a nightmarish scene in which they were held incommunicado in solitary confinement and subject to physical and psychological torture for the duration of their imprisonment. Held without a trial or court hearing and tortured, the plaintiffs are suing for damages rendered against them in Cape Cropper, where Rumsfeld and several other unnamed officials allegedly developed, authorized, and used harsh interrogation techniques on them, thus violating their basic civil, constitutional, and human rights. After his arrest, Vance was told point-blank that he had no right to an attorney, even though this is an explicit guarantee of the Constitution's Sixth Amendment. You do not have right to legal counsel, but you may have a personal representative assist you at the hearing if the personal representative is reasonably available, he was told in legal documents handed to him during his detainment. The Detainee Status Board reviewed the U.S. officials' detention decisions and eventually ordered that both men be released. Ertel was released approximately 1 month after his appearance before the board. Vance was detained for an additional 2 months before he, too, was released. Both men continued to be interrogated and mistreated throughout their detentions. Upholding a 2010 lower court ruling on the issue, the three-judge panel voted 2-1 to allow the case to move forward on the basis that the plaintiff's complaint alleges in detail that they were detained and illegally tortured by the U.S. military and released from military custody without even being charged with a crime. In the final court decision, Judge David Hamilton wrote, "This appeal raises fundamental questions about the relationship between the citizens of our country and their government. The Government Accountability Project, together with the Project on Government Oversight and the Society of Professional Journalists, filed an amicus curiae brief to the Seventh Circuit regarding the case, arguing that a decision against the two whistleblowers would have meant that American citizens working in war zones, contractors, journalists, aid workers, etc., could be deprived of their basic constitutional rights while there, and that violations of such rights would have no recourse. Out of many suits brought against Rumsfeld over the torture of detainees in Iraq, Vance is one of only two that has been allowed to proceed. The Government Accountability Project is co-counseled in the other suit, John Doe versus Rumsfeld, along with Chicago-based civil rights law firm Levy & Levy, which represents Vance and Ertel in that case. On August 2, 2011, the United States District Court for the District of Columbia in Washington, D.C., upheld the validity of a constitutional rights claim by Doe against Rumsfeld for his role in the torturing and illegal imprisonment of Doe, a U.S. citizen who was working as a translator in Iraq. In November 2005, while working as a contract translator in Iraq for the Marine Corps, Doe, an American citizen, was taken into custody as he was returning home to the United States on leave. Doe alleges that he was kidnapped by U.S. military personnel and whisked away to Camp Cropper. As the suit notes, plaintiff was not held for the purpose of an investigation or prosecution by any branch or component of the Iraqi government. Nor did United States officials charge him with any crime, nor had he committed any crime. Plaintiff was not told when or if he would ever be able to leave. For months, no one in his family could find out if he was even alive. All they knew was that he had disappeared. Throughout his detention, plaintiff was held in torturous conditions of confinement, subjected to threats on his life and denied an attorney or even access to a legitimate court to challenge the government's actions. After being held incommunicado for 9 months without charges, Doe was released without explanation or an apology. In John Doe v. Rumsfeld, the plaintiff was granted anonymity by the court due to fears that his relatives could be subject to retaliation. Commenting on the August 8th decision, Mike Kanovitz of Levy & Levy, the lead attorney in both Vance and Doe, said this court was faced with a choice between protecting the most fundamental rights of American citizens in the most difficult context of a war, or leaving those rights solely in the hands of politicians and the military. The court sided with the rights of the citizens. It was not an easy choice for the court to make, but it was the brave and the right choice. The Vance Ertl case exposes the myriad links between private contractors, U.S. forces, U.S. government officials, and intelligence agencies that often converge in the dark cells of detention centers, such as Abu Ghraib, Guantanamo Bay, and Cramp Cropper. According to court documents, both Vance and Ertl were employees of the private U.S. government contractor Shield Group Security at the time of their arrest, stationed just outside the so-called safe or green zone in Baghdad. In 2005 and 2006, Vance and Ertl became increasingly aware of corruption within Shield Group Security, noting, among other suspicious activity, that the company was making payments to Iraqi sheikhs, likely to obtain influence with powerful local players, and accumulating a cache of weapons that was flowing steadily to officials from the Iraqi Interior Ministry, which had ties to armed militias and death squads. Alarmed by the situation, Vance and Ertl began passing information on the company, sometimes on a biweekly basis, to the Federal Bureau of Investigation, until they were whisked away to Camp Cropper in early April 2006, for working for a business entity that possessed weapons on its premises, and being involved in the possible distribution of these weapons to insurgent, terrorist groups, Ertl's detention notice read. According to the Chicago court's decision, the men then endured conditions that were perfectly consistent with torture treatments approved by Rumsfeld's Defense Department, including living in cells whose walls were smeared with feces, being deprived of food and water, forcibly kept awake in brightly lit rooms, and made to endure intolerably cold temperatures. "Even Saddam Hussein had more legal counsel than I ever had," Vance told the New York Times in 2006, adding that he and Ertl wrote a letter to the camp commandant claiming that "the same democratic ideals we, the U.S., are trying to instill in the fledgling democratic country of Iraq, from simple due process to the Magna Carta, we are absolutely, positively refusing to follow ourselves." At the same time, First Lieutenant Leanne Fracasso, spokeswoman for the Pentagon's detention operations in Iraq, insisted that the men had been treated fair and humanely, adding that there was no record of their written complaints. Rumsfeld's attorneys attempted to dismiss the lawsuit on the grounds that the Secretary of Defense should enjoy immunity from criminal actions. Rumsfeld also claimed that the plaintiffs should be denied recompense, since the violation of their constitutional rights occurred in a war zone. While Rumsfeld was sued personally, he is being represented in the case by the Justice Department. The government also usually pays any damages awarded in such cases. Regarding the matter of Bivens' claims by civilian U.S. citizens in a war zone, the court made it clear that there can be no doubt that if a federal official, even a military officer, tortured a prisoner in the United States, the tortured prisoner could sue for damages under Bivens. The court summarized Rumsfeld's argument. "The defendants contend that a Bivens remedy should not be available to U.S. citizens for any constitutional wrong, including torture and even cold-blooded murder, if the wrong occurs in a war zone. The defendant's theory would apply to any soldier or federal official from the very top of the chain of command to the very bottom. We disagree and conclude that the plaintiffs may proceed with their Bivens claim." Instead, the court agreed that plaintiffs have alleged in sufficient detailed facts supporting Secretary Rumsfeld's personal responsibility for the alleged torture. "Second, we agree with the district court that Secretary Rumsfeld is not entitled to qualified immunity on the pleadings. The law was clearly established in 2006 that the treatment plaintiffs have alleged was unconstitutional. No reasonable public official could have believed otherwise." Upon analyzing whether plaintiffs' allegations of torture entail a violation of their constitutional right to substantive due process, the court said that the Supreme Court has long held that certain interrogation techniques, either in isolation or as applied to the unique characteristics of a particular suspect, are so offensive to a civilized system of justice that they must be condemned under the Due Process Clause. The court also cited the 2011 Supreme Court decision in the case of Brown v. Plata, which concluded, "Prisoners retain the essence of human dignity inherent in all persons. Respect for that dignity animates the Eighth Amendment prohibition against cruel and unusual punishment. The basic concept underlying the Eighth Amendment is nothing less than the dignity of man." The court rejected the claim that the government officials should be above the law, stating in its final decision, "We see no persuasive justification in case law or otherwise for Rumsfeld's more sweeping argument, which would deprive civilian U.S. citizens of a civil judicial remedy for torture or even cold-blooded murder by federal officials and soldiers at any level in a war zone. United States law provides a civil damages remedy for aliens who are tortured by their own governments. It would be startling and unprecedented to conclude that the United States would not provide such a remedy to its own citizens," the decision said. It would be difficult to reconcile the law of nations prohibition against torture and the remedies the United States law provides to aliens tortured by their governments with a decision not to provide these citizens' plaintiffs a civil remedy if they can prove their allegations. The defendants have not attempted to do so. As the Second Circuit held in Filartiga v. Peña Irala, deliberate torture perpetrated under color of official authority violates universally accepted norms of the international law of human rights, regardless of the nationality of the parties. To decide qualified immunity, the court turned to whether the alleged rights were clearly established. This is not a case where the precise violation must have been previously held unlawful. Where the constitutional violation is patently obvious and the contours of the right sufficiently clear, a controlling case on point is not needed to defeat a defense of qualified immunity, stated the court. Given the totality of the plaintiff's allegations that they were interrogated with physical violence and threats, were kept in extremely cold cells without adequate clothing, were continuously deprived of sleep, and were often deprived of food, clothing, and medical care, a reasonable official in the Secretary Rumsfeld's position in 2006 would have known that this amounted to unconstitutional treatment of a civilian U.S. citizen detainee. "We are sensitive to the defendant's concerns that the judiciary should not interfere with the military decision-making. The Constitution recognizes that core strategic matters of war-making rest with the executive. But it is equally clear that while we accord the greatest respect and consideration to the judgments of military authorities in matters relating to the actual prosecution of a war, and recognize that the scope of that discretion necessarily is wide, it does not infringe on the core role of the military for the courts to exercise their own time-honored and constitutionally mandated roles of reviewing and resolving claims," said the court. The court had previously cited the Siderman de Blake v. Republic of Argentina 1992 decision, where it says that it would be unthinkable to conclude other than that acts of official torture violate customary international law. And while not all customary international law carries with it the force of a jus cogens norm, the prohibition against official torture has attained that status. The wrongdoing alleged here violates the most basic terms of the constitutional compact between our government and the citizens of this country. As to the modest property claim against the United States, however, we agree with the government that the Administrative Procedure Act's military authority exception precludes judicial review of military actions affecting personal property in a war zone, and we reverse the district court's decision on that claim. Civil liberties and human rights advocates say that while the court's decision sends out an extremely hopeful message about accountability and justice, it is a sobering reminder of the detainees who are either still languishing in detention cells or have yet to receive any compensation for the months or even years of their lives that have been stolen by U.S. interrogators. This information has been provided by the Government Accountability Project, Interpress Service, and the related judicial decisions themselves. For further information on human rights and the state of exception, you can visit Radio Niscor and Equipo Niscor's specialized web pages. This program has been produced by Radio Niscor at our studios in Belgium on August 11, 2011.